You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome to the Talking Chop Podcast. This is episode 24. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and today we'll be wrapping up the trade deadline that passed this afternoon. We are coming to you one day late in order to allow the trade deadline to pass. And while nothing really happened on this final Monday, it was probably worth the risk in the end, considering the Braves were certainly in the midst of a lot of things. Today, I am joined by the great Scott Coleman. What's going on, Scott?
Hey, Brad. How you doing? Too bad. Figured we'd have some more to talk about, but we've had plenty of stuff that the Braves the last couple of days, so should be a lot to digest.
Yeah, we could have recorded on Sunday night. You and I talked offline and kind of decided it'd be smarter to wait, thinking the Braves were going to be one of the more active teams. It looked like they were probably going to do something, and then they didn't.
Yeah.
But here we are. It's not too late. The Braves aren't playing tonight. We're recording on Monday night. No game tonight, so it's not like we're missing anything, and you'll still have plenty of time to listen to this podcast before they start playing baseball. If you're even still watching baseball, you listeners out there, a lot of you I know have kind of punted on watching games, and it's tough to blame you, but hey, we're always here, and it's time to talk some trade stuff. Well, the big news in Braves country this week was obviously the Matt Kemp trade. The Braves essentially traded Hector Oliveira and all of his troubles to San Diego in exchange for Matt Kemp in the rare one-for-one bad contract for bad contract trade. There are a bunch of logistics to get to, but before we get to all those, Scott, I'll just ask you overall takeaways on this one. Are you happy with the deal? What are we thinking here in terms of how the Braves did in getting rid of Oliveira?
I'm about as indifferent on this trade, I think, as possible. The Oliveira situation was just so bad. The Braves, he made a horrible decision, and he did it after not producing on the field. He was essentially dead money to the team. And, if the Braves were a Dodgers or a Red Sox or a Yankees, and they could just kind of boot the $28, $30 million, whatever he had left on his deal, and just kind of cut him and say, well, there you go. I think they would have. And at the end of the day, while it was pretty obvious that Oliveira wasn't going to play a game, another game at least in Atlanta, I don't blame the Braves for trying to get something, especially if they consider it to be sunk money. So, of course, there's many, many aspects of the deal which we'll go over. I'm kind of indifferent on it. Matt Kemp for $8.5 million a year, which is how the money shook out. He is still going to be making the full $21.5 million he's making. It's just when you cut out the money that Oliveira was making and the $10.5 million that the Padres via the Dodgers are sending over. Of course, the trade looked a little bit better when everybody thought they were getting Kemp for $5.5 million the next three seasons, but $8.5 million really, the difference of $3 million is not a huge amount in today's baseball world. So I'm kind of indifferent on it. There are some ups and downs and positives and negatives with this deal. But we'll certainly see, and it's exciting to get a guy like Matt Kemp, even if he's, even just a shadow of what he was a couple of years ago as an MVP candidate. It'll certainly be something to see him in left field and at the plate.
Yeah, you mentioned the money stuff. That's something we should at least go over for the fans who haven't read up on this yet. The Braves in the trade are getting $10.5 million. That's the reported figure from San Diego, potentially via Los Angeles. In exchange for Kemp, and that basically pays for the rest of his salary this season. And after that, the Braves would be paying him $18 million per year over the next three, running through the 2019 season. That, of course, when Oliveira was making about probably about 9.5 if you average it out over the next couple of years. Also, that basically means that the Braves are paying, as you said, $8.5 million more for Kemp than they would have been paying for Oliveira. And given that, I think it's pretty obvious at this point, given this trade and this return, that the Braves were never going to bring Oliveira back. They were never going to say that publicly because that would have further killed his trade value. But they were non-committal about bringing Oliveira back, even when he was eligible to play. And it looks like, with their willingness to take on this much more money, that they probably were going to, cut bait with Oliveira one way or another. But, I guess just the contract itself, I mean, even if it was 3 years for $54 million for Matt Kemp, that wouldn't be great, I'll say that. And I know what you were doing, and what I'm kind of doing also is kind of just talking about the difference, meaning that it's $8.5 million a year. That's fair to do. But it's, at the same time, this is not a team that has a big budget, as you mentioned. So it's almost as if they cut Oliveira and are paying more. So that's what it is. There's different ways to think about it. Kemp at 3 years for $8.5 million per season is less than he would have gotten on the open market, if you think about it that way. Even with all of his flaws as they kind of exist, and we'll talk about those, that would have been a value deal. So if you think about it that way, then it's absolutely a win. But that's also the most optimistic way of thinking about it, considering the Braves did make the mistake of trading for Oliveira in the first place. Obviously, they couldn't have seen the domestic violence coming. But all of that to say, this is one of those deals that you kind of mentioned. It's kind of a lukewarm feeling. Kemp is a fan favorite, and we'll get to that in a minute, of a reason why he's kind of ingratiating himself positively already in Atlanta with something he did today. But I don't know. It's one of those things where Kemp is not great. I think people think Matt Kemp is better than he is. Not diehards like us. You and I can look at the numbers and kind of decipher that he's not been great in the recent past, but he was at one time one of the best players in baseball and with the Dodgers, and people know him because of that. He used to date Rihanna, which makes him more famous. There's all sorts of things to make Matt Kemp more interesting, but the player is not that inspiring, and I can see why you're not terribly excited about it.
With Kemp, he's such a figure, and you touched on kind of his coming to Atlanta, and he wrote something in the Players Tribune, which is worth a read. Whether Matt Kemp actually wrote it or he paid somebody at his agent's office to write it for him.
It's probably a combination. I know a little bit about Players Tribune. I know a couple guys that work there. He probably, from what I understand, he probably wrote it but didn't write it, if that makes sense. Like, it's probably his thoughts, not necessarily formatted in the way that he would have formatted them. It's more of an oral history kind of thing.
Sure.
But yeah, his thoughts at least.
Yeah, and it's worth a read. It's not super lengthy, and it touches on him, being a Braves fan, growing up in middle of nowhere Oklahoma, and talks about, the only game he could get on TV was the Braves on TBS, which, any Braves fan of more than, 10 years or so remembers. I mean, that's why growing up in Missouri and now living in Arizona, that's why I am a Braves fan. And in middle Missouri, it was easier to watch a Braves game on TBS than it was to watch a Royals game on Fox Sports, Kansas City, or whatever it was at the time. So there's a lot of good stuff he talks about. And, he's pretty honest. He's talking about he kind of got caught up in the Hollywood superstar thing, making $20 million a year, dating Rihanna. I think he's dated some other high-profile people over the years. And he said he just kind of lost himself and lost his love for the game a little bit. Now, with that said, I don't think anybody should expect Matt to come to Atlanta and suddenly look like the player he was in 2010, 2011, when he was one of the greatest players in baseball. But it was, it's certainly interesting to get his take on in his career and his personal life, hopefully getting out of Southern California, getting to the team he grew up watching, gives him a little bit of juice. And if he can turn it into something, I think the Braves would take it. As we've said, they weren't getting anything out of Oliveira. If he can be a right-handed power bat, which there are zero of in the upper levels of the farm system right now, I think it's probably a worthwhile deal for Atlanta in the long run.
Yeah, that's the reason I think that the Braves did this deal, aside from getting rid of Oliveira, which is obviously the biggest part of this, in my opinion. They just wanted to get rid of that contract and really the headache that he has brought. But as far as baseball is concerned, the right-handed power is a big thing. The Braves don't have any of it in the majors, quite obviously. And you mentioned that it's one of the weaknesses in the minors right now is that they don't really have that guy. Plus, with the way the outfield is shaking out, and we can get deeper into this if you want to. It's more we talked about a little bit already in the podcast, is that right now three of all three major league outfielders that we know are major league outfielders on this roster right now, Malik Smith, Ender Inciarte, and Nick Markakis, none of those guys have any power. And you don't want to play three guys in the outfield that don't have any power. So for all of Kemp's warts, and I'll read off the numbers here in a second, he does have power. That's the one thing that he still does that we can kind of bank on him doing, is hitting for power. This year he has 23 home runs and 431 plate appearances, and that's over a 30 home run pace for the season. There are some other things that are not great about his game, really most things, as far as the last couple of seasons have not been good outside of the power, but the power is legit. And to have that kind of power bat was something that I'm sure the Braves were targeting, and probably the reason why they made this move was to add a bat like that. He is 31 years old, which hilariously is not older than Hector Oliveira. He is a little bit older by months than Oliveira was, but you would think, given Oliveira's status as a quote-unquote prospect, that Kemp would be a lot older, but they're actually the same age, which made me laugh when I realized that earlier today. But you mentioned it. I don't think Kemp's going to get a lot better considering his age. Maybe something of a bounce back considering all the stuff that you said about him getting back to sort of his roots, getting back to a more just baseball-first, baseball-focused mentality. You've seen some positive signs this year in San Diego. But as far as the overall player is concerned, there are some issues starting with his defense and his inability, at least recently, to get on base. Do you think that's either one of the things that are going to be rectifiable? You mentioned, and I think Mark Bowman reported this, that I think the Braves are planning on playing him in left field. That should hide a little bit of the defense. I think a lot of his awful defensive metrics stem from playing center field when he should not have been playing center field. But what do you think about his potential as a defensive player in left field? We'll start with that.
Defensively, when you're next to a guy like Ender Inciarte, assuming that Ender is around next year, and we'll touch on that in a bit, I think it'll certainly help playing next to a Gold Glove caliber center fielder. Kemp certainly has no business at all being in center and in right field. Anyone who's ever been to Petco Park knows how large of an outfield that is, especially right field with some odd dimensions down the line. So I think moving to left field, he still has a big arm. He just doesn't have any mobility, any lateral quickness. So he's certainly not going to suddenly wake up tomorrow morning and turn into a solid defender out there. I hope that the Braves start to align Inciarte towards a couple steps towards left field just to help. Hopefully, as we move on in the rebuild, you get someone like Dansby Swanson at shortstop who can cover kind of short left, which is, snag a couple plays as Andrelton Simmons used to do to kind of make up for the shortcomings in left field. But no, he's never been a great defender, and at the age of 31, almost 32, he isn't going to just suddenly wake up and be a solid guy out there for, 6 or 7 nights a week.
Yeah, he's lost a lot of athleticism too. I think when he first came up, he had that that stolen base speed, had some good years on the base pass. And you think of at least the more casual fans always think of guys who are fast as good defenders. First of all, Kemp's not fast anymore. He's not like the slowest guy in the world, but he's not really a fast guy at this stage of his career. Whether it be just because of wear and tear or age or for whatever reason, he's not the most fleet of foot guy in the world. And speed's not everything anyway, as we saw with guys like Jose Constanza. Speed's not everything defensively, even though people think that it is. But I think hiding him in left field is going to be helpful for Kemp's defensive value. We've seen the Braves try this before long ago with guys like Ryan Klesko, a guy who they basically just stuck in left and prayed. They were going to try this with Oliveira. That was the plan with him upon arrival once they figured out that he couldn't play third base. Was to stick him in left field. Left field is, aside from first base, the least taxing position on the diamond defensively. So if they can get even remotely average production defensively, that would be a huge win. Even if I'm expecting it to be below average, kind of like what you said. But having Inciarte or Malik Smith in center field will help because those guys are both Smith was good in his limited time this year, and he's also quite fast, covers a lot of ground. Inciarte is legitimately awesome defensively. So either one of those guys next to him will help a lot. Right field remains to be seen what they're going to do there. But I think hiding Kemp a little bit in left will help. Just, and this is the same argument that I've made, and I think you've made as well, about before this, moving Markakis to left field would have been a plus for his defensive value because of the fact that he just can't cover ground anymore. And most alignments, most ballparks, I think you mentioned Petco, there's a number of different ballparks around where right field is significantly more spacious than left field. You'll see most teams play their guy with the best arm in right field. There's a reason for that. Markakis does not have the best arm and can't move. But sadly, he now has to play right field as currently constructed, at least. Provided he's on the roster, I think this is crazy for me to say out loud. I think he's a better defender than Matt Kemp. So, me praising Nick Markakis' defense is a new thing for this podcast. But I think him playing right is the right move now. With Kemp and left, and that's the lineup moving forward, at least until we get some clarity on what Markakis' status is moving forward.
And I think while we have kind of, we aren't even bashing on him because they're facts. You know, Kemp is not a good defender. He does bring some positives to the Braves, and he's not, you know, it's not like the Braves acquired one of the worst players in baseball here, or at least the last couple of years he hasn't been anything close to that. As you mentioned, Matt Kemp hits. I mean, the guy has crazy power, even playing the last 2 years in Petco Park, over about 250 games, has 46 home runs. He has hit upwards of 23 home runs in each of like the last 8 or 9 years. His WRC plus has been above 100 really his entire career, even this year and last year, as he's fallen off a bit. From his solid year in 2014 with LA, still 109 and 104, which is slightly above the league average. So he can hit. And the other thing he really does is he pounds left-handed pitchers. Just absolutely destroys them, hitting over 300 against them the last couple seasons. His slugging percentage against lefties the last 2 years is approaching 600. And you look at this lineup right now, and other than Freddie Freeman and Adonis Garcia when he's on one of his little hot stretches like he is now, there's really no legitimate threat to hit the ball out of the park at any time. So he will bring some right-handed power, which will certainly help Freddie Freeman and kind of help balance the lineup a little bit. And we'll see, you know. And at the same time, you mentioned Malik Smith, you mentioned Nick Markakis, and maybe we kind of transition into that a little bit now. He doesn't necessarily have to play every single day because the Braves have some flexibility, especially once Malik comes back. And you look at the minors and you have a guy like Dustin Peterson who could potentially see Atlanta within a year or so. So we'll see. He's certainly not going to be the star that people remember him as, but he will provide the Braves with some right-handed power, and that's something the team has not had really since they got rid of Justin Upton and Evan Gattis a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the fact that he mashes left-handed pitching. That's huge in terms of when this team is contending, whether that be next year or the year after. There's no reason he has to play every day. If they find a good fourth outfielder that can be more of a platoon partner for Kemp at times, not a pure platoon probably because of all the money he's making, that kind of makes that difficult to build a roster. But at the same time, like even right now with the four outfielders, provided Malik was healthy, I'm not sure Markakis will be on the roster with Kemp much longer, but even if you had those four guys, you could play three of the four of them, you know, responsibly on a daily basis. Obviously, three of those guys are left-handed. Well, NCRT effectively is left, he hits right-handed pitching much better than left-handed pitching. It's one of those things where you could play all three of the lefties against the right-handed pitcher, kind of avoid Kemp and always play him against lefties. Maximize him in the way that they have with Jeff Francoeur this year, who they've actually gotten some actual value out of Francoeur because he's been good at hitting left-handed pitching. That's all he can really do right now, but he's doing that effectively and has been all year. So more on a grand scale than that, obviously, because Kemp is making a lot of money and has a lot more upside than Francoeur does at this stage. But it's worth noting that if this team is contending next year or the year after, there's nothing set in stone because of the contract that says Kemp has to suddenly play 140 games and face right-handed pitching all the time, because he just doesn't. If he's not hitting it, I'm sure they're going to give him every opportunity to stay in the lineup. But if you see a big enough sample now, where he only becomes not a lefty specialist per se, but something where it's clear that he's only going to be effective or overly effective against left-handed pitching, they could sort of spot him more often than not in the future, at least.
I think so, and I think that's probably one way that the Braves can use kind of their abundance of outfielders to their advantage. As you mentioned, I'm not sure that Markakis and Kemp can coexist, but I would be kind of interested to see a super platoon, if you will, between Kemp, who of course is right-handed, Alex Smith, who's a lefty, Ender Inciarte, who's a lefty, Dustin Peterson. Again, I'm probably higher on Peterson than just about anybody who listens to the podcast, but he's 21 years old and just destroying double-A pitching right now in a pitcher's park. If Peterson can come up within a year or so, he of course balances out a little bit. So we'll see how the Braves do it. They also have some money to spend this offseason, especially if they unload Markakis to another team, even if it's at a discounted rate. So maybe they go out and add another bat in the outfield. Maybe they kind of say, well, let's kind of let the kids play in 2017 and see where we're at after that. But I certainly don't think Kemp plays every day. But if you can utilize him against lefties every time and then pick and choose whenever he goes against a righty when there's not necessarily a better option that night, he could be pretty valuable, at least from an offensive perspective. It's just a matter of his defense being serviceable enough.
Yeah, and that's, I think I'm pretty positive. There's a lot of Braves fans who hated this trade today this week, about just basically saying that Kemp isn't good. And I kind of see that if you look at the overall spectrum with his defense and all that stuff, and you look at the WAR stats, his contract is obviously not worth his production. But it's, you have to throw in all the other factors, the Oliveira thing with knowing the team is going to move on. Look at the positives that Kemp does bring, like power. I don't hate it at all. I'm totally fine with the deal. I'm not overly energized by it, kind of like you at the beginning. But it's certainly not awful by any means. We should say, as we've talked about a little bit, there's been some reporting out there. I think Mark Bowman wrote about this a little bit today, or I think it was maybe yesterday, that Ender Inciarte and or Markakis could be involved in some trade discussions, even if it came in August with the waiver period. He was mostly focused on Markakis and said that was more likely, which makes all the sense in the world, considering Markakis has the defensive limitations, the bigger contract. The defense, no matter how good Ender Inciarte is in center field, your outfield defense is not going to be good with Kemp and Markakis in the corners.
That would be disgusting to watch over a full
season. It's just not going to be good. So Markakis has been the obvious trade guy forever. We talked about that, you and I, me and really everyone on this podcast. I bring that up almost every time ad nauseum. So I don't want to get too deep into scenarios on Markakis, but I think this does make it more likely that the Braves move on from him. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't really see any way those two can coexist. If the Braves want to be competitive, and if you take anything that John Hart said to heart yesterday when discussing the deal, the Braves now do want to kind of shift towards being at least respectable in 2017. But for that to happen, I can't imagine they have both Kemp and Markakis set to start 140, 150 games in the corner spots.
Yeah, that would get ugly in a hurry. And I'm glad you mentioned the thing about getting more respectable in a hurry. Dave O'Brien from the AJC, who's a fan favorite in Talking Chop circles, has always been that way. But he tweeted this afternoon that the Braves may look to hold on to Jim Johnson, for instance, because they are wanting to make the end of the season more respectable. I kind of chuckled aloud at that. I don't know. I understand why he would say that. I understand why the Braves would say that. There are obvious reasons why they want to say that. They're not going to say, oh, by the way, we're not trying to win. I hope and pray that was not part of the logic in keeping Johnson. I should say that, there is room for some August waiver deals, especially for guys on short one-year contracts like Johnson, Frank Hoare, Gordon Beckham, those guys who could be dealt in the next month after clearing waivers. I should say that out loud. So it's not as if Johnson has to stay on the roster, but I thought that was kind of insane. Not blaming DOB for writing it, because I'm sure he was told that, but it's one of the things, like, I hope that's not the logic here.
My thought is, John Coppola, the last 2 years, has literally flipped
everyone
to get anything. I mean, you could be a guy with the upside of a sixth or seventh inning reliever in a couple years, and if there's an opportunity to get you, he'll take you. I honestly think, knowing that a deal could be made in August, I can't imagine anybody was lining up to give anything of substance for 2 months of Jim Johnson, especially with his career history of really kind of blowing it in the last couple months after trades. He was awful last year with the Dodgers after the trade. Of course, that was the Hector Oliveira trade. So if I'm the Braves and I just look at that and go, you know, do we want a D-plus level prospect for 2 months of Jim Johnson? Probably not. I mean, at this point, they have so much pitching depth. If no one was going to give him anything, I guess you might as well keep him. But opposite of DOB's point, I don't think the Braves kept Jim Johnson for the reason of, hey, we want to be competitive the next 2 months as we fight to not have the worst record in baseball.
But Scott, he's the National League Player of the Week.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, it's miracles happen, I guess, considering how bad he was earlier. But regardless, I really don't think it was the Braves looking to be more competitive. Who cares if they win 65 or 68 games this year or 60 games? It's really more that just no one was offering anything. And at that point, you might as well keep them just to have in the back end of the bullpen the next couple months.
Yeah, I'm with you. And before we move off, I know I did a bad job there of transitioning, but before we move off of Kemp, Oliveira, all that stuff, Markakis, I was going to ask you, as I was asked this today a couple times, who do you think is the starting 2017 outfield? And I'm not asking you to pick a free agent, but if you think it's going to be a free agent, just say free agent X, unless you want to name a name. But if you were, you know, gun to your head, what do you think the outfield looks like at the start of next season?
I think it'll be Matt Kemp in left field, Ender Inciarte in center field, and Malik Smith in right field, with the idea of having a Jeff Francoeur, someone similar, to split starts with Malik, or at least face lefties on occasion, because he has, you know, he has the arm for right field, and he still pounds lefties as he's done his whole career. But yeah, if I had to make a prediction, I'd say Malik's in right, Inciarte in center, and Kemp in left, which would be a lot of fun to see Inciarte and Malik's play next to each other the full season.
Yeah, that's a safe bet, I would think. Also, I think they're going to have to move on from Markakis. As far as ugly as that could be, my fear is that they're not going to want to pay all of that money. He's still owed $22 million over two seasons. The Braves are not going to like it to have to pay all that money, and they're certainly going to try to sell him off for less than that. I just don't think he has that much value. So getting something back from Markakis is probably not going to happen. You're better off almost paying the money and getting maybe a B prospect back with paying all the money. More than that, though, on the outfield for next year, I would be curious to see if they maybe play Inciarte in right and Malik in center.
Sure.
Only because I think Inciarte has a better arm. And he's played some out. He's played some right field. I don't think has Malik ever played right field.
I don't like extensively. Think so. I think it's been in the minors, strictly center field, and then of course he got a couple chances in left this year.
Yeah, the problem though, of course, is that you know, if you're playing really either of them, but especially on Inciarte in right field, his bat in right field is not gonna play. So that's the worry, is that, and that's the one argument for if the Braves wanted to go make an offseason acquisition in the outfield, that's why you would do it, because obviously the defense would be great with Smith and Inciarte next to each other, but offensively you don't want Ender Inciarte as a everyday starter in right field. And center you can kind of get away with it because he's so good defensively, and the hitting expectation is obviously lower. But in right, you want ideally to have a real bat there, and he's not going to be that, I don't think. I think the ship has sailed on Inciarte as a real bat at that level.
Yeah. No, Brad, I think your mic is cutting a little bit.
I'm here. You got me?
Yeah, it's just distorted. I want to make sure.
Well, hopefully it's going to come back.
There you go. Yeah, you're good.
Well, there we go. We've avoided technical disaster on the podcast.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
With all that out of the way, we should at least bring up actually, let's get to the other thing first. There was another trade this week. It was earlier in the week, but we haven't recorded since then. It was less sexy, but actually certainly a clearer win for the Braves. It involved the Texas Rangers and the Braves sending Lucas Harrell and Dario Alvarez to the Rangers for a former first-round pick. I'm going to go with Travis Demeritt as the pronunciation. I don't know if that's right, and you can sue me and scream at me if I'm wrong, but I'm gonna go with Demeritt and the Braves essentially flipping two guys off the scrap heap for a legitimate prospect in Demeritt. Did you like this as much as I did?
Yeah, absolutely loved it. They flipped two guys who they weren't even probably sure would reach the big leagues when they signed them in May, and they flipped them for a legitimate first round prospect.
Yeah, that's a win, I would say. Demeritt is 21. His numbers look better than they actually are. He has 25 home runs and a 583 slugging percentage, which seems incredible in late July, early August in high A. But he is playing in a crazy hitter's park, which means there's a little bit of room for skepticism on those numbers. But he does have real power. And he was, as we mentioned, a former first-round pick in 2013. I should say that he does have an 80-game PED suspension on his record. It was for a masking agent, one of those diuretics that kind of is rumored to mask actual PED use. But that was a, that was not, he's not on that now. He's eligible to play. We don't know how that affects things moving forward, but he's been lighting it up this year at high A. And, he's not... not a lights out prospect. There are some flaws. His power is really the best thing by far, but he has been a solid infielder defensively by all accounts. Most scouting reports like him to at least be able to play second base reasonably. There are some, the jury is out on whether he can move off of that, because the Braves obviously have two middle infield guys already in Albies and Swanson. So there's been some questions about whether he can play third base, maybe some outfield. It's more about the bat. He's very raw. He's 21. A high school guy out of the draft, but anytime you can get a real prospect, he was one of the top 10 prospects in Texas's system. MLB Pipeline ranks him now as one of the top 10 prospects in the Braves system, which I think is pretty aggressive considering how deep the Braves are.
But I know that's listen, a little high on him.
High, but regardless, like, this is to get something of this kind of value for Lucas Harrell and Dario Alvarez is just like Houdini from Copy.
Yeah, I mean, again, it was two guys that were literally any team in baseball could have had, and to be able to have, really, to get some decent value out of them for 2 months, making the league minimum, to flip Alvarez and Harrell for a legitimate prospect. Demerit is a kid who has a ton of swing and miss to his game. Of course, it's never good to judge based off of a sample of this size, but I think in his first 15 or so at bats with Carolina, he struck out like 10 times. So that's who he is. He's a smaller guy, but he swings for the fences. Whenever he does make contact, the ball just flies off his bat. I think he's just missed two home runs and already has a couple doubles and triples in the couple games he's played with the Braves. So again, if he was the headliner piece and, in a bigger deal, you worry about his bust factor, because there's a pretty good chance that he swings and misses kind of his way out of the minor leagues. But even if he turns into a utility guy, a bench weapon for a power hitter off the bench, you take that. Javier Baez of the Cubs is probably a best case scenario for him. He's athletic. He could handle a couple of positions. If he can just put the bat on the ball enough and doesn't strike out, in a third of his at bats as he's done kind of so far as a professional player, there's value in him. And again, you said he's 21 years old, pretty raw as far as a prospect. Might be a guy who takes a couple more years, probably needs to repeat double A or high A ball next year. But again, you got him for almost nothing. He's kind of like the Touki Toussaint in that factor of you gave up almost nothing to get him. And if he turns into nothing, no harm, no foul. But if he does turn into a nice little piece, we'll look back on this trade in a couple years as one that really kind of helped move the rebuild along.
Yeah, this is the sneaky stuff I love about Copy, is just these deals that seem small, but they're clearly like everybody loves that gets this stuff. Like, Texas, you can't fault the Rangers. They're going all in. They went and got Jonathan Lucroy today. They went and got Jeremy Jeffress. Like, they're going out and they're going all in. So the Rangers wanted to go get somebody that they thought could help them this year in Harrell as like a swing starter. Alvarez was good with the Braves in limited outings out of the bullpen. So I get it for Texas. I don't like it for Texas. I love it for the Braves. But this type of stuff you have to take advantage of. You find a team that's trying to go all in and exploit them. And that's what Copy did, and that's the reason why I like his GM stylings to this point, is that he's always up for getting some extra value in a place that you probably don't see it coming.
Absolutely. In the middle of a rebuild like we are, even towards the end of the rebuild, and he said this before, even when the big league team is good, you always want to keep restocking that farm system. That's why the Braves fell off to an extent the way they did after the 2014 season. They just didn't have that crop in the minor league system. Hopefully, even as the Braves, again, hopefully come out of this rebuild in a positive way, they continue to make low-key moves like this that can only help in the long run.
For sure. Just ask Frank Wren how it went to gut the farm system. You don't have to end up with the worst farm system in baseball. It's kind of, it really is kind of insane. I thought about this the other day, of going from the worst farm system in baseball to the best farm system in baseball in what, less than 2 years?
Yeah.
That's impossible. I mean,
well,
it's
crazy. As we've seen, if you know, you follow along the deadline today, the Yankees are selling everybody off. The Brewers got a serious haul for Luke Roy. The A's traded Josh Hill or Reddick and Hill to the Dodgers and got a huge return. You know, it's kind of the thing that the Cubs and Astros did about 5 years ago when they did their rebuild. The Braves and even the Phillies to an extent have done something similar. And while the Yankees will never go full on rebuild, it's clearly what front offices are doing now, trading away your big assets to speed along the rebuild process, because the last place you want to be right now is kind of in that purgatory stage. You're not a playoff team or even close to being a playoff team, but you're not horrible. When you start winning 72, 77 games a year, that's when you never get out of it, and that's when things can get ugly in a hurry.
Yeah, and that's why I'm on board with the rebuild for sure. We should mention at least one big rumor that didn't come to fruition, and that was having to do with Brian McCann. Old pal Brian McCann, former Duluth High School standout, longtime Atlanta Braves star, has obviously been with the Yankees for a while, signed a huge deal with the Yankees in free agency that landed him there. There was some rumors, some rumblings that the Braves were interested in bringing McCann back, as the Yankees, as we talked about, were doing a bit of a sell-off. But McCann is owed, it's two more years at $17 million per season. Give or take a few dollars and cents there, but that's the general gist of it. And the Braves, it seems like, were not willing to take on the majority of that money. They were going to, all the reporting indicates that they wanted the Yankees to eat a lot of that money in order to bring McCann back for a reunion. It would have been a lot of fun for me. And obviously, I think McCann would actually have been a great fit with Tyler Flowers. McCann would have played more often because he's the lefty and obviously the more famous, better player. But ideally, because of the way the Braves have Flowers on a bargain contract, if the Braves could get a left-handed catcher a la McCann, that'd be a great fit to kind of pair those two together. But the money, McCann's not worth the $17 million a year right now at this stage of his career. He's still an above-average catcher, but at $17 million, you're looking for probably a little bit more than that. And his age is not not enticing. I think McCann is like 33 now, maybe.
32 and a half, really. It'll be 33 on opening day next year.
So, yeah, I mean, that would not have been the greatest thing unless New York paid significant money. It looks like the Yankees were not willing to do that. It would have been fun, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think, and really, the Brave, you know, as all the rumors started to circulate on Twitter, even the Braves have come out and said, or I guess the sources, whoever you want to source for the writers, the Braves don't value McCann at $17 million a year. They value him at about half of that. Of course, the Yankees don't want to just pay players to leave, especially, as you said, McCann is not a horrible player by any means. He's probably a two-win catcher. He has been the last couple of years.
Which is really good right now for catchers.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if they can get you know, McCann at a discounted rate, you certainly take a look at it. And maybe we touch on this a little bit. You know, there is Matt Wieters and Wilson Ramos on the free agent market this winter, and the Braves have hinted that they are looking to spend money, and they could spend money on those. And if they can get McCann at a discounted rate compared to, you know, Wilson Ramos getting 5 years and $100 million, Wieters getting a 2 or 3 year deal, about $10-15 million annually, I think it's certainly something they'll entertain and try and get a bargain. As you mentioned, I do think that McCann and Flowers could be a really nice platoon behind the plate. Say McCann starts 100 games and Flowers starts 60. I think that could be quite valuable, and both are really good with a pitching staff too, which will certainly help the Braves as they continue to break in their young starters at the big league level.
Yeah, I would much rather have McCann for 2 years, even at his rate, than going and signing Matt Wieters. For instance, I think you had that tweet today about Wieters and how ugly it's been recently. You know, Ramos is a better prospect to give that contract to, but he's also going to make more money. So I would not have hated, honestly, if the Braves traded for McCann for the full salary, but clearly they didn't want to do that. And it's tough to blame him because it is an overpay. It's not a massive one if McCann could just replicate what he's done the last couple of years. But the Braves, after taking on the Kemp money, I'm sure we're probably reticent to take on another lucrative guy for the next couple of seasons, not knowing what the team's going to look like.
Well, the thing too, everyone talks about players being overpaid. Other than rookies or young players, of course, who are on their initial deals, how many guys that have signed as free agents in the last 5 or 10 years do you look at and go, boy, they're really underpaid?
None.
You know, there's almost no one. You're going to overpay.
Tyler Flowers.
You know, right. Yeah. I mean, really, that's, and he's a dime a dozen. I mean, right. For every 10 players or 15 players that are way overpaid, you might have one guy who kind of flies under the radar. Ben Zobrist is a guy who I love that's always kind of been underpaid, or at least he was before last winter with the Cubs. But everybody is overpaid. So to this, the whole thing about, well, he's worth this and he's not worth that. Well, if everybody's overpaid, what's the true value of a dollar anymore across the baseball landscape? So we'll see. And again, if the difference is either McCann at, you know, 3 years, over the next 3 years, making $10 million annually, or Wilson Ramos the next 5 years making $20 million annually, I think it's a pretty obvious choice for a budget-conscious team like Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, that's your point. Your overall point is one that I totally agree with, and which is why I would not have been upset about taking McCann's full salary. Because, I mean, $17 million, it's an overpay, but it's a shorter contract, and you know, I mean, McCann's about as safe as it gets. The guy's never been bad in his career. Like, he's always been good. He's always been healthy.
Yeah.
He's not a superstar anymore. He used to be a legitimate star, and now he's just an above average catcher. But listen, if he hit the free agent market right now, he'd probably get more than that.
Yeah, he's just a solid player at this stage of his career. He, like you said, he's not going to go out and contend for an MVP candidate, but he's also, barring injury, which you could say for just about every catcher in baseball, he's going to be steady and consistent and not surprise you, which is honestly, after watching guys like AJ Pierzynski catch 200 or so games the last two seasons, I think consistency is obviously key for catchers.
For sure. And we miss you, Brian McCann. Come home if you want to. Please, please, please come home. It's fine.
Party like it's 2005.
I would be so excited. Anyway, before we wrap this thing up, I do have to ask you about one non-trade thing, and that is that Matt Whistler got demoted earlier this week. Before I ask you what you think of that decision and how he's pitching, I should say that Whistler has a 7.71 ERA in his last 10 starts. And in that time, he's allowed 16 home runs in 53.2 innings, which translates to about a 50 homer pace over a full season, which is inconceivably bad. So I should, I'll lay that out there and just ask you if you're worried about Matt Whistler and if you agree with the decision to send him down.
Yes, absolutely. I think the Braves really didn't have an option or a choice in the matter. You know, he's, when you have an ERA over 7 in your last 10 starts, and overall his ERA is a 5.16, and you dig a little deeper in his numbers, you think, well, maybe he's just been really unlucky. Maybe teams are just blooping him to death and then hitting a homer. His FIP is 4.97. His peripherals, he's not striking guys out. He doesn't walk many. He's never walked many, but he's, you know, at this point, it's the home run ball that's killing him. And while he'll seemingly have a couple solid innings, there seems to be that one inning or two where the wheels just completely fall off. I don't know if it's mental or physical at this point, but clearly he wasn't figuring it out at the big league level. He's still a pretty young guy. He's only 23. And there's no shame in going down to Gwinnett when you're 23 years old. There are plenty of 23-year-olds in AAA. So I think it was a move the Braves had to make, both for their benefit and Matt's. I think he still has the potential to be a 3 or 4 starter one day, but clearly he wasn't, whatever he was doing at the big league level was not working out at all.
Yeah, I agree. I was needling Zach Diller of Fox Sports South, who is the world's leading Matt Whistler fan, about this on Twitter, but I do agree with the move to send him down just for confidence. You don't want to let this guy kind of stew for very long and have him lose confidence. I still believe in Whistler as a major league starter. I think he is one and a useful one. You said 3 or 4 starter. I'm in line with that. He's not going to be much better than that. But I think he is a major league starter. We've seen flashes of that in the recent past, and given his age, there's reason to believe in that. But the Braves have enough arms to plug in. And again, this is not a team that's going to be competing for anything the rest of the way this year. So if they have to plug in guys who are just journeymen to just make the innings work at the major league level, that's just fine. It's better to do that than to risk losing Whistler's confidence forever by having him just get shelled every day. So go down, you know, light it up at AAA, hopefully, and get your confidence back and come back for another run in September when the roster expands, or even before that. If they see that something's been ironed out in his mechanics or something that they were worried about, it's been fixed, they can bring him back up. We've seen him be, you know, not awesome, but a solid major league pitcher at times, you know, a guy with an ERA around 4 for extended stretches. So that would be just fine. And I'm all on board with Whistler as a major league starter. So I hope this is just a blip. But the home run stuff is worrisome just because, as you mentioned, he doesn't really strike anybody out, and he never has, which I'm cool with if you don't walk anybody, which he hasn't, which is good, which that's one of the reasons I believe in him, is because strikeouts are less worrisome if you don't walk people, but home runs are terrifying. And the rate that he was giving them up, I mean, that's some historic stuff with allowing 16 and 53 innings. That's some craziness. So,
well, and it wasn't as if he was facing a stretch of playing, you know, the Blue Jays,
right,
Red Sox, and you know, the Cubs. He was getting lit up by the likes of the Nationals and the Phillies and the Marlins. So at that point, it's something has to give. You have to figure out something else to do than just throw the ball and let guys hit it 400 feet.
Yeah, his stuff's just not that good. I mean, it's not bad stuff, but he has to hit his spots. That's just the type of pitcher that he is. He's gotten some comparisons to Braves legends, which have been hilarious.
Yeah,
just because of pitching style. So I'm not trying to crap on it too much, but you hear the Glavin stuff and the Maddox stuff, and it's like, all right, I get what you're trying to say. He has to be a pinpoint control guy. He's not those guys. He learned some stuff from Glavin. He talked to Glavin famously. I think it might have been Zach Doe that wrote about that this offseason. But I still believe in Whistler. I'm just a little bit worried, not overly so, but it's something that the Braves absolutely had to do. That'll pretty much wrap it up for today. Scott, anything you want to plug aside from the regular goings-on at Talking Chop or anything like that?
Yeah, 2 more months, and, you know, it's
yes.
People are still tuning in and reading the site, and, you know, I'll always kind of say the big league team might not be any good, but I personally love opening up the recaps every night, the minor league recaps, and seeing what the prospects did. And lots of fun stuff. It should be a fun offseason too, and we still have all of August and September. Hopefully guys like Dansby and Albie start getting called up here in the next couple weeks, let them get a taste of the big leagues before next year. It certainly make the last 8 weeks or so go by a little bit smoother, a little more enjoyable than watching Eric Ibar and Daniel Castro up the middle every night.
Yeah, shout out to Daniel Castro, one of my personal favorites. Thanks to everyone who's been listening to the podcast, and really everybody that's been reading the site. We've been doing quite well. Been really impressed with the investment that the community has had in reading about the stuff, the prospect stuff especially, but even the major league stuff, keeping tabs on us. We appreciate that. And please tell your friends about the podcast and the site. I don't think you'll find better Atlanta Braves coverage anywhere on the internet. That's me being biased perhaps, but I do believe it. You can follow Scott on Twitter at ScottColeman55. You can follow me on Twitter at BTRoland. Please follow the site on Twitter at Talking Chop. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or any other platform that you may have for podcast listening. Also on SoundCloud, which is our host site. And again, we'll always be here. We'll be back next week with another episode of the podcast. So thanks for listening.